Holy Human with Leanne Rimes is a production of iHeartRadio. Joining me now is an exceptionally talented man that I am so grateful to also call my friend. While we definitely connected during our time together on The Masked Singer, we actually go back a lot further. We sang a duet together on my Today is Christmas album a few years ago. And in the spirit of The Masked Singer, I'll throw out some clues. He was born Egbert Nathaniel Dawkins III to Panamanian parents in Southern California. He was a Renaissance and trustee scholar at the University of Southern California, where he majored in linguistics and psychology. And after graduating, he went on to become the international recording superstar known as, drumroll, Allo Black. And I am so happy to welcome him on the Holy Human podcast. Allo Black, welcome to the Holy Human podcast. Thank you so much for coming on here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I have to say, if anyone has met this man, you are one of the kindest human beings I have ever been around. And it brings me such joy to just even be in your energy because your heart is so full and what you give to people is so beautiful. So just thank you for that.
Thank you. You seem the same. So I guess game recognized game.
Right. I'm so glad that we actually get to sit here and talk about our experience on The Masked Singer because, first off, as I have been keeping this in for
months,
weeks now, yeah. And it's been really difficult. People hitting us up thinking it's us on the show. How has the experience been for you of just keeping it quiet?
Well, keeping it quiet is definitely the hard part because I was trying to keep it a secret and make it a surprise for my wife. And there was one, I think it was like a holiday, Labor Day or something came up and she was wondering, why am I working on Labor Day? Why can't I cancel whatever I'm doing? Right. And so I had to open up and let her know that, okay, here's the deal. I know you didn't sign the NDA, but this is the secret and I was going to surprise you with it.
Oh,
but now let's keep it a secret and we can surprise the kids.
Yeah, because, I mean, how old are your children?
I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Okay, so, yeah. Have you and your family ever watched the show before?
Previous seasons, no. We hadn't watched as a family. This season, we're certainly watching as a family. And recently, my daughter said, oh my gosh, Mushroom kind of sounded like Daddy for a second. And then I realized,
I love that.
That's the end of this group episode that we're going to watch. We're going to watch all the other groups. We're not going to watch my group's episodes anymore.
That is too funny. I know for me, like I was in the studio recording. It was I don't want to say lie, but that was my white lie. What were you out doing?
Same,
were you in the studio?
Same exact. I had on the calendar, you know, this thing about a toy company I was negotiating with and that I was making children's music for. And it's true, I am doing it, but it just wasn't happening then. And right. So that was what was on the calendar. And that's what the... Do we say lie?
That's what the lie was. Our fib. Yeah. Because I was in the studio too at the same time-ish. So it wasn't really like quite the lie. But what led you to say yes to The Masked Singer?
I had been asked to participate in The Masked Singer in another country. And I was really seriously considering it. But I thought the travel, the time away from family, all of that was going to be a bit overbearing. The fact that it was in Los Angeles, just down the street from my house, it sealed the deal, but also to be able to be someone completely different and experience what I do on stage as a brand new character and with a brand new energy, I thought that was an exciting part of the show. And it doesn't hurt that it's the most popular show on TV.
Right. Yeah, that's such a, the character and developing the character was such an interesting piece. And one of my favorite things about the show was the team that we got to work with. Like every single person was so creative and just brought their own gifts to the show. And there were so many gifted people. Like when you started creating your character, did they present you with the mushroom? Did you have an idea to do the mushroom? Like tell me that whole process.
Right. Well, they had a few ideas of what character they could present me. They all seemed a bit too close to who I am. Mm-hmm. Right. My stage name is Aloe. And one of the characters was Broccoli. And I thought, that's a little bit too close, a green vegetable. And right. Then there was this other character, I think it was a shark or something like that, and with a fedora or a trilby hat. And it felt mm-hmm. like, okay, that's a bit too close to my style as well, like in a suit.
Right.
So I thought, what is the complete opposite that looks different? And the mushroom outfit looked very different from me and from the artist that I am in my career. So I figured this was the one. I wanted to play the game and try to throw everybody off the trail.
I have to say, I had no idea. No idea until...
until the day
very,
we were in the same...
last,
yeah,
huh?
Until the day we were in the same building at the same time.
Yeah, no. Well, because we were also in different groups. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't gotten to hear you perform. And you were next to me warming up, singing Stevie Wonder. And I started like harmonizing with you like underneath my breath. And literally I go... damn, we sound good together. We should duet, whoever that is.
Already done.
Funny enough, we've already done that
yes,
in real
we have.
Life. Which you are so gracious to come on my Christmas record, and that's one of my favorite.
Great song.
Favorite. Yeah, it's so good. I love your voice so much. It's interesting. I remember after the whole finale and mm-hmm. after I won and I was like, can I go hug him? I know we'd all been, you know, tested. And I'm like, that's my friend. I just want to go hug him. He's the sweetest man.
I'm so glad you did.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you did. It was a real moment finally
yes.
in this masked world, right?
And right.
Of putting on airs and like trying to be something different. That was a real moment. Thank you.
Oh, yes. And thank you. And I was crying the other day because I was thinking of our conversation today, and I was going through just your life and just questions and thinking about things. And one of the things you said to me right after was, I hope she was hearing how much love they had for her. And I literally, I remembered that the other day, and I told my husband, I started crying. I was like, that's so sweet. Like, but it was so cool to have a friend like next to me at the final and not even knowing it.
Right. That was awesome. You know, I didn't realize who you were either until the end. There was a text that I received out of the blue from Daryl. And I thought, why is Daryl texting me right now? And I thought, do I respond? Does he know? He has to know. Is that Leanne? Oh my goodness. That is Leanne.
I just want to quickly explain to you guys that Daryl is my wonderful manager.
And so I texted him back and was like, hey, how's everything going? I tried to keep it, you know, a bit
right.
casual and not blow my cover.
Yeah, no, he knew, I know, like at the very, very end. And he didn't tell me because I was totally like, just had no idea. And it was so interesting to me because I don't know. This is something I want to get into with you is competition. Like, how are you with competition? Because for me, I've really kind of dug into this because I haven't had to be in kind of that kind of competition like mode for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting what it turns on inside of me. There's like this, I'm going for it, like full out, like, you know, everything I've got goes into the creation or went into the creation of my character and the songs and the whole thing. When it was down to you and me, it was like, it was so interesting what I recognized for myself about what competition does, because I started competing when I was really, really young.
Right.
Competition for me was almost like, to win was the way that I learned how to receive love.
Oh, wow.
Or that's like what I equated it with. And so I know what comes out in me to avoid the feeling of loss, or mm-hmm. How I equate quote unquote losing is like a loss for me. So I think in my mind and my body, like what comes out is like, I have to win. And then when it's your friend next to you, I'm like, I don't anybody else feeling opposite of winning, like, which who knows how you felt, but in my mind, it's like for anyone to have to win this at this moment is like really sad because you're my friend, you know? So how does that play out in your world?
So for me, okay, I haven't had to compete since high school,
right?
Like in sports and music festival where I played the trumpet and I had to compete for first chair. What comes up for me in competition now is like, just have fun and winning doesn't matter. That's what comes up for me. It's like, I was in this game playing it to see how long I could last and fool the panel. So that's what I thought really the Masked Singer was about, fooling the panel, not
standing
the final, who is the last person
right
to win the golden mask.
You did amazing.
I thought I did pretty good. I was like, I'm fooling them. It seems like it's, I'm getting away with it. So I felt like I was doing all right. I think that's where all my competitive spirit was in, like making sure that I was, you know, ducking all the clues.
Yeah, it was interesting for me because I actually have said no to the show. They've asked me to do the show before. And even this time I was like, I don't think I can do that because I don't think I can fool people with my voice. And then am I doing myself an injustice if I go to try to disguise my voice, and how would that sound? And from their point of view, they were like, no, just be you and do you. And like from the first show, my Twitter was blowing up like that.
Oh my goodness, no.
Oh yeah, instantly. And I'm like, I just knew people, like people have grown up with listening
so
to
you're
my
like
voice
a family
for so
member.
Long. And I was
they
like, there's
know
no way
your
I
voice.
Can.
They
yeah,
know it.
There was just no way.
I tried to throw different voices as often as I could.
I love that.
Because I knew if I went in with my regular, you know, and well-known timbre, immediately they would guess who I was and the show would be over and I wouldn't have any fun. And so for me, the fun was really just coming back and singing something different with a different voice. I asked for female power ballads.
Oh, wow.
So that I could try to approximate a whole different kind of energy and a different timbre. And especially with the mushroom outfit that had,
yes,
you know, the stem that was basically a skirt. Then I put on this character that was like my little daughter's energy when she dresses up in her princess dresses.
Have you ever worn a skirt before that
time? No, I haven't. It was the first time. And you know what? When I perform on stage, I do a lot of funky soul music. So I'm dancing. I'm like, you know, doing
yeah,
James Brown
moves
and all kinds of stuff. And I couldn't move the way I wanted to move on stage because
right,
the skirt was really restrictive. So, you know, if I ever do this again, I'm definitely getting pants.
Yeah, well, you did great. And that's, we actually were backstage. I remember talking about how well you played that skirt because, I mean, you did it well. And we were like, oh no, like you had kind of the feminine quality about it, which was so beautiful. How did that feel for you to like bring out that side of you?
I just kept thinking of like, when I'm playing with my daughter and she's, you know, she's dressing up in her princess outfits. When she's on stage, we have this raised area over by the fireplace where she'll perform. And all of that really started to be the kind of character of the mushroom of who I was. And even though I know they changed the voice, I would still even speak into the microphone like this. I was changing my voice on purpose, knowing that they're going to change my voice later. It was,
oh my God,
it was all
amazing.
Ridiculous.
It worked so well though, because you really had everyone fooled. I mean, to me, you were my favorite part of that show because of that reason. Like you clearly thought out that process of really disguising who you were.
Thank you.
And it was,
but your voice sounded phenomenal on all of the songs, and the way that you performed Billie Eilish's When the Party's Over was stunning. It was,
thank you,
awe-inspiring.
Thank you. Yeah, that was interesting because the arrangement was really interesting. What was going on in my ears and what people couldn't see because everything was a cappella. So then it was,
oh, wow,
all of these different counts.
Right.
One, two, three, one, two. Like, and so I was so nervous before that because I'm like, I'm so going to screw this up.
This is the hard part about the show. There's so much going on in your ears. There's the count.
Yes.
There's stage managers. And then there's the nervousness of performing but not having a second chance because you're in front of the panel, right? And so it's not a rehearsal. This is real. You're doing it live.
Yeah.
You're stuck in this hot costume. You're not sure if it's picking up all your moments perfectly. Like, it's really tough. This is not an easy show.
No, it's not. It was a lot more work than I expected ever for anything like that to be. And what was your experience inside the costume? Because I know for me, like, you know, the head piece, are you like at all claustrophobic?
I'm not claustrophobic.
Okay.
But the headpiece was heavy. And I was like, I'm going to need 2 weeks worth of massages every day to get over this, you know, the muscles that are growing in my neck right now.
It was definitely a challenge because as a singer, as you know, like everything needs to be open and free. Mm-hmm. And I actually lost my voice.
Get out.
So right after the first show, mm-hmm. because they had us singing, they had us pre-recording everything. There was so much to do in so little time. And after the first show, I came the next day to record and I all of a sudden started warming up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm losing my voice. Okay, we're going to be right back with more Inside Scoop from Behind the Masked Singer. Welcome back, you guys. So yes, after the very first show, I started to lose my voice. So I ended up on steroids, steroids, and like was so worried. Like I had the worst experience. And one of the reasons was because of the weight of the costume, like made me start contorting myself and doing things that I wouldn't normally do.
I feel you.
So people have no idea what's going on.
That's one of the things I didn't prepare properly either. And there was no one to tell me. Like my producer, it was amazing, but I don't think he understands nuances of a singer. Right. So when I went in to pre-record the Just In Cases, like in the studio, I went hard. I went like six takes of each song. And the next day I was like, uh-oh, I got to actually do this on stage.
Yeah.
I wasn't strategizing properly. So then by the end of the whole thing, I think my last song, the finale song, was when my mm-hmm. voice was the weakest. I remember rehearsing backstage because they had vocal coaches for us. Mm-hmm. Rehearsing with a vocal coach. And I was like, you know what? Let's just take it down another half step. Okay, let's go down another half step. Just so I can get the notes that I normally get. Because at this point, my voice was tired. A lot, really tired.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm on the road a lot of the time. I'm sure you are too. And this whole situation wouldn't have happened. I don't think I would have said yes to the show because they usually spread it out over a significant period of time.
Oh, really?
And it's usually like several weeks. And so for us, we got like this condensed version.
Oh, yay for us then. Okay. I thought this was how it was. Good.
It was great, but it was definitely challenging. I feel you on the costume, but I did love being, like you were saying, a different character mm-hmm. of ourselves. As an artist, do you really feel like you wear a mask as an artist? Do you feel like there's any fragmentation there for
there's
you?
There's definitely, fragmentation. I call it compartmentalization. Like
there you go.
There's a Nathaniel Dawkins, that's my legal name, and then there's an mm-hmm. Aloe Black. And then because I came up as an MC, as a rapper, there's a whole other kind of character and energy to what I do as a rapper. And then there are songs that I write that are literally, you know, kind of teeny bopper pop songs that I could mm-hmm. never present as the bow tie and fedora with a three-piece suit guy, right? So, you know, I feel like there's all kinds of compartmentalization. And then the real me that you get is when we do an interview like this. You know, like I'm not being Aloe Black right now. I'm not on stage. I'm just being myself.
How does that stage persona serve you? Could you walk on stage as just you?
You know, I can. I've walked on stage as just me, and I do that when it's an acoustic performance. When I'm with my pianist or my guitarist, and we're really the bare bones, just voice and instrument, and I get mm-hmm. to tell the stories behind the songs, how I wrote them and how the ideas came to me, that's when it's not the showman. when I've got my full six-piece band, sometimes with background singers, usually not, I've got to put so much energy out, and I love call and response. I love getting the audience to dance and clap and be participating in the concert. I call it a party instead of a concert. Then that's when I know I'm something else, right? I'm putting on the Aloe Black character.
Well, I'm sure that also comes into play too from, like you said, you being a rapper and an MC.
Guaranteed. Like, you hit the nail on the head. So because I came up as a teenager having to rock a stage, there's no getting on. I have ballads. I have really tender, soft moment songs that I never do on stage with my band. Because when I'm on stage with a band, I need to make the crowd say, hey, and yes, yes, y'all, and ho.
Right.
And, you know, that's, I'm still trying to be LL Cool J or Run DMC on stage as the soul singer. So
I love that. I love that. What I feel for me was you a really intuitive, sensitive human being. And with that being said, what revelations did you have? Were there any things that surprised you about yourself or things that you learned being another character that you wouldn't have learned unless you would have been on the show?
Definitely a new level of endurance.
Right.
There were moments where they were like, oh, do you want some water? And I was like, nah. And then I got to the point where I was like, you know what? When they ask if I want water, just take it. Just take it. I'm not proving nothing to nobody. Just take the water.
Right? Totally.
I was like, I can do this. I'm going to rough through it. So, you know, a new level of endurance, but also just the idea that I could probably do theater. I'd never done choreography on stage. For me, it's all about freestyle. When I was young, the hip hop clubs, going to the dance circles, and it's all freestyle. It's not, there's no choreography, not the kind of things that kids are doing on TikTok nowadays where they memorize movements, right? It's like, I had in this moment to learn how to move while I was singing, and that is brand new. And I'm interested to do it more now, to have some choreography, but probably not with my soul music, probably with something else. And it could be a whole new artist character that I develop that will be doing it. But
that's cool. I mean, have you always wanted to do theater? Is that something that you've
I keep thinking about it. I just keep thinking about how it would feel like a prison to me, because music is such a free form of expression and I get to control every single piece of it. Since I was young, writing, producing, mixing, mastering, all the engineering, even the artwork, all of that stuff I would do either by myself or with my hip hop partner, DJ Exile. But being in a film or on a TV show or on stage and having to do the same exact thing over and over again and having to be at a specific place in time, the same place in time over and over again, feels very restrictive to me. And that's something I think I would have to get over to engage. But I think I would love to do theater. I've been coming up with a one-man piece.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Is it the monotony or the lack of control?
I think it's the lack of control. My wife says I have control issues. I know it's true. I do. But, you know, I feel like this is what I'm in a comfort zone with this much freedom. Yeah. And I can do these other things where there's less control for little bits of time. But then I just...
So does that control bleed over into like into all of your whole life?
I think, I mean, my wife would say yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but definitely there are other parts. You know, musicians that I work with, I love working with new musicians all the time. And that's because they get to color their personality onto the performance in a different way. I have a band in Paris. I have two bands in LA. You know, when I go to Australia, I have a band in Australia. And they all play my songs differently.
That's cool.
And I'm not controlling or strict about how they share their personality on the music.
Right.
Where the control comes in is like strategies, processes, functionality. I'm a process-driven individual, so when I can foresee like 10 moves ahead, I want to be sure all those moves are met and I don't want to take any extra time to explore any other avenues because I already know it, like I saw it. Clear as day.
Well, so that's your intuition. Like that's you trusting.
Yeah, but you know.
You.
I trust myself. That's me trusting myself.
Right. Yes.
I have to do some work to open up and be a bit more relaxed when other people are involved.
Right.
Because of my status, and this has been for many years, not just as a career artist, people assume that I have executive power. And it's because I take the position of executive power, and that mm-hmm. then subordinates others in a way that makes them feel that anything that I say could and is incisive. And I don't want to let that assumption of power subject others to a feeling of subordination, you know?
Right. How do your children, because when you have kids, mm-hmm. like I have two stepsons, and I know when I have kids, like all, because I like to control things also. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've definitely done some work on being able to be a lot more collaborative in many ways. I had a writing session with someone the other day who is another artist, and it was the first time I've ever done that. And it was so interesting because I'm like having to hold myself back.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm not gonna say that right now.
Right.
Like really trying to walk the line of allowing that real collaboration of allowing someone else to process, having my own process. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. I feel like my stepsons have taught me so much about allowing everyone's personality into the room and allowing for flexibility because, you know, I grew up an only child mm-hmm. and I talk about non-flexible. I mean, but at the same time, I was also very much a kind of codependent caretaker with everyone. So I would still make sure that everyone's feelings were taken care of. But at the same time, I felt like I was, for my own safety, need control. And I just wonder what your kids have taught you around that.
Okay. Kids have taught me that my concept of control has to be thrown out the window completely. Okay. I didn't realize it until my son was 3 years old. He's four now. You can't just constantly exert your will over kids. They want, and they're supposed to push and pull to find out what the boundaries are. And sometimes you allow them to find those boundaries on their own. And then sometimes, you know, like when it's something dangerous, you make sure that you set that boundary. Kids need to play through some moments. When my son is acting up or acting out, I change my mind. And I say, he's not acting up. He's not acting out. He's not being disagreeable. He just wants to play through this. And so when I change my mind about it, I play with him through it. Then we eventually get there, like brushing teeth or, you know, putting on your pajamas before bed. It's not that he doesn't want to do it. Why is he running around the house naked? He's not trying to make me upset. He just wants attention in a certain way, and he wants to play mm-hmm. through it. And at the end of everything, when my kids are older and I'm at the end of my life, what I want them to say about me is that daddy was fun. We always had Aww. Fun with daddy. So instead of me saying, hurry up and get to the bedroom and put on your pajamas, I'll chase him. I'll chase him around, pick him up, tickle him, and carry him to the bedroom and put on his pajamas.
Right.
Because ultimately, when he's 10 years old, he's not going to be running around the house naked. And
well, and I think maybe.
And if he is, then I take back everything I'm saying now. But I'm hoping that when he's 10 years old, I didn't leave those moments of, you know, parenting where I could have used more authority. I didn't leave them in a way that made him a derelict. That's what
right.
I hope. And I don't think it'll be that way.
Oh, it's so beautiful that you brought up the word play because, you know, I started so young and I lost so much of my childhood and it didn't really dawn on me till I had children around me and saw, I mean, their dad is so wonderful with them and how he played with them. And I'm like, oh, I didn't, being an only child and having a job mm-hmm. so early on, like I missed play. And part of my discovery with the Masked Singer was getting to play again,
yeah.
like as a character, because I remember growing up, you know, being outside and playing on my own and having all these characters and people that I talked to. And I created those, you know, when I was little. And it was almost like it took me back to being five again and getting to create a character and play. It's amazing that you're doing that with your children, because I think that adults forget that piece.
I think we as songwriters, as performers, entertainers and singers, we are almost the very last playground. The last real playground for adults.
Aww,
There, of course, are other
makes me sad.
Forms of art that are entertaining and are playgrounds as well, but they're a bit rigid. Television shows and films, everything's spelled out for you. Mm-hmm. Music, there's still a whole lot of interpretation going on. Visual mm-hmm. art, there's still a whole lot of interpretation going on. And we get to play with our fans, and they get to play with us the whole day. You hear a song mm-hmm. and it stays in your head the whole day, maybe a whole week or month. And you're constantly in this playground. And you can go to it whenever you want because nobody else can hear it. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that we have as songwriters. And hearing your story about the songwriting session, writing with other folks,
yes. I
got into that a couple years ago, and I dove headfirst into it with a bunch of blind date songwriting sessions. Like, just random people I never met in my life, right. But I'm going to go write a song with them. And I started to learn a lot of different techniques and songwriting methods. And I think it's improved my ability as a songwriter. It's broadened my perspective as a songwriter as well.
How does that control play into that piece
for you
when we're
doing it? I surrendered. I surrendered right away. Yeah. Not right away, sorry. I didn't surrender right away. There were sessions where I was really, really silly with the control. So I enjoy process. And mm-hmm. I was experimenting. I had theories and I had all kinds of, concepts about how to make the best song. At one point I was like, writing a song with a producer who's making a beat in the room, creating a vibe, is cheating. Because what you're doing is you're borrowing that vibe and you may end up skimping or slipping on the quality and the strength of the words. So I was like, let's just go in. We're going to write a song. We're just going to write some lyrics and we're going to come up with a melody. I'll have a piano nearby so we can come up with chords around the melody, but let's come up with a concept, words, lyrics. And a couple of times that rubbed the songwriting partner the wrong way because they totally needed a vibe. They come from a vibe place.
Yeah.
And, I didn't surrender and I didn't check their needs and I didn't acknowledge what the moment required. And mm-hmm. so at this point, I kind of sit back and I glean the best from the people that I'm in the room with.
It's interesting. It's an interesting process to dance on that line and collaborate. And, I think, like I said, as an only child and someone who's been running my life for so long, thank God I actually had kids in my life to teach me a little bit of that mm-hmm. because I think it's made me a much softer human being and be able to collaborate with people because it's we're meant to be communal people. We're meant to
Absolutely.
We're meant to collaborate like this, When you do it with art, like you're all painting a picture together and it's a beautiful experience to have to be able to connect with people on that level.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, on that beautiful note, we're going to take a quick pause. But when we return, Alo reveals his greatest takeaway from behind that mushroom mask. Welcome back, everyone. So I have a question I'd love to ask given our shared experience. What did you learn from the anonymity of wearing the mask that you think you will take forward with you?
Okay, this may sound a bit functional or clerical, but really it is be prepared no matter what. So part of me felt like, oh, I'm wearing a mask. I can phone it in, but it's not true.
Right.
And you should never phone it in. You should always, always be prepared and always give 100%.
You know, the great thing about the mask for me as a woman was I could phone in my hair and makeup. It didn't matter. I was in sweats, outfit, back into sweats, like did not care. I'd come in with wet hair. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely always be prepared. And I think you had to be even more prepared, which we didn't know when we first started. I think you had to be even more prepared because of the mask.
Absolutely.
Like you really had to know what you were doing because you were contending with a gazillion
so many variables,
other things.
Yeah.
Interesting. I just want to pivot here and go into your history with your psych major.
I did major in psychology and linguistics when I was in college.
Which is very cool. When I was little, I was like 5 or 6. I have no idea how this came to my head, but I either wanted to be a singer or I wanted to be the first female baseball player because I loved baseball, or I wanted to be a psych major. I mean,
there you go.
Five or six. I have no idea how all that came to be. But I just found that so interesting about you. Like, as far as wearing the mask, if we're going to talk about that from your psych brain, how do you see that playing out in the world right now? Like, we've all been wearing masks for, I mean, our whole lives. I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel like this is a time of, as we're being revealed, do you feel this is a time that people are actually like starting to take those off?
I don't know. I think people think they're starting to take their masks off. But I feel like social media has doubled down on our superficiality. I think because we have these over-enhanced, embellished lives where we only get to show the best sides on our Instagrams and our Facebooks and Twitters, that it's a mask that exists, and it also persists in a way that is wholly untrue because it's not the whole story. And it also makes other people feel uncomfortable or inadequate or insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at our social media feeds and we see other people's lives that are so amazing, we're not qualifying the fact that there's a lot of stuff they're not showing us. So when we measure against our own reflection, we see all of the bad and all of the good, and it doesn't measure up to someone who's only showing you all the good. That's why I feel like I don't know that we are unmasking yet. I thought that the pandemic would be a moment that would fully ignite this concept and enlighten everyone that we are all super connected in the most existential ways, especially when it's just the air between us that is ultimately what could affect us.
Right. Interesting.
But politically, it just got spun terribly. And I think we as artists, our opportunity, our challenge is to unify people again through music and bring people together and give them a chance to feel whole and human without the pretense, you know?
Yeah, that wholeness piece is, like you're saying, there's, and I call it fragmentation, there's so much fragmentation that happens, especially on social media, where people feel like, oh, this piece of me, and it's not just social media, I feel like for myself, you know, this has been kind of my whole life of don't bring that piece of you to the party because it's not accepted, you know? And, you know, the mask of, especially for me, being the good girl and like all the things that were fed to me from a very young age, and that fragmentation. For me, my healing of that has actually been the way I use social media is actually to share the pieces that haven't been brought to the table. And that's new for me. That's a new revelation. And I think that this whole pandemic has actually enlightened me in the way of like, I want to bring all the things to the table that haven't been accepted, because that's the way healing happens to me, in my opinion. And you're right. I feel like this pandemic allowed us to touch upon that. But there's a lot of bravery. There's a lot of, you know, it takes a brave soul to walk that path of being fully exposed and honest. And I'm still digging into the layers of that. But I do think it is our responsibility as artists to connect people. But also, if we have the opportunity and the platform, for me at least, it's like, I want to show up fully. The fragmentation for me has been so painful.
Okay.
I think sometimes if people really sit down and think about it, it's painful for them too. You know, it's like if there are pieces of you that are unacceptable, that can't be brought forth, then like there's pieces of you that you aren't loving, that you aren't extending love to. I think that's like you saying that door opened for people, but did they walk through it? You know,
yeah.
Who knows?
I feel like as an artist, I have not offered enough of who I am, of myself. I've been playing the game of presenting art and not presenting myself. And I always had this idea, this theory, you know, as an artist, I get to create characters. That's my artistic license, poetic license, is to create stories and characters and present something other than who I am. But this last album for me was an opportunity to start trying to share more. That's emotional, sharing more that's personal, sharing more that's intimate. And getting even deeper and closer to who I am, hopefully in subsequent projects, so that I am showing up fully and not just as the showman.
No, I dug into your new record a bit, and I see that, and I appreciate that, because I think you have so many beautiful things to share, and you're such a beautiful human being, and your heart is just so in it, and I just really appreciate that and respect that about you as an artist. So thank you. And speaking of artistry, because I know music, obviously, like we're saying, unites so many of us, and I always find it interesting to dig into everyone's little like music catalog and see what interests them and like what they're into. So we have this thing on here called the Holy Five.
Okay.
And so what would be like your five top songs? It could be just what you're interested in now or what you've been like throughout your life, like what you've loved. What would be your top five?
Okay. So it's all over the place. My top five.
I like that.
One of my favorite artists of all time is Bill Withers. I feel like when I started singing, I adopted a lot of his style. Lean On Me would be one of my top five songs for sure.
Lean on me when you're not strong.
Yeah. I'm a huge, huge fan of Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. There are too many songs of his to name to put into a top five. But, you know, I remember when I very first accepted Stevie Wonder as my own. It wasn't my parents anymore. He was my own.
Right.
Golden Lady was one of the songs.
To see the heaven in your eyes is not so far.
And that's the one that I remember having a huge impact on me and my love for Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
When I started singing, the artist that sort of made me make that transition from rapping to singing, I saw an infomercial for Cat Stevens. And in this infomercial, I saw his face and I saw him playing guitar and singing, and he felt like he believed every word he said. And the emotion that I just felt from just seeing him made me want to do that. And so
that's cool.
There's a song called Father and Son that he has that's really powerful.
To listen now, there's a way, and I know that I have to go away.
His writing's amazing, yeah. Absolutely. Who do you love now? Like, what's something that's inspiring you? Like,
I cry to a song called Be Good by Gregory Porter. He's one of the new talents in jazz music.
Oh, wow. And I haven't heard that. I have to go listen.
The music video, the song, the lyric, the voice, the musicianship, all of it is above 100% in my opinion.
But the warmth of your kiss I can't dismiss. Though my past has left me bruised.
And it's hard for me to find that a lot of times where someone's punching way above average on so many different variables.
Yeah, agreed. For your fifth song, if I may, what is your favorite off of your new record? Do you have one?
Harvard is my favorite off my new record.
Everything they need, well, don't we all got issues? It's just the stuff we live through. Everybody's got their coffee stains. I ain't complaining, I'm just singing.
It's the last song on the album, and it's just, in my opinion, a touching story about how connected we are. We may have different livelihoods, different sources of income, we live under potentially different circumstances, but there are still emotionally some of the things that we just are trying to do that it's all the same. We all want to be happy. We all want comfort. We all want to provide a life for our kids. And so, you know, I really like that song. I feel like it's one of the stronger songs that I've written.
I love that. I love what I hear in your music is what I feel like where I'm going with mine right now. And like you're saying, it is connecting people and it is reminding people of who we are and where you're going and where you are right now with your music is just beautiful. So congratulations on your new record. I know that takes a lot to birth something into the world.
Thank you.
So, and thank you for coming on here. Thank you for chatting with me about life and the Masked Singer. And I'm just honored that we're able to connect.
So. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm really happy that you asked me to come and talk to you. And it's nice to catch up again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I didn't get my fifth song, then I would say Joni Mitchell's Anything.
Oh, wow.
Joni Mitchell's Anything.
Anything Joni Mitchell, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe Big Yellow Taxi.
Oh, very fun. There's your playful side.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, much love. I'll see you soon.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, that's it for this episode. Please don't hesitate to share it with anyone you think would benefit from listening. And I would love to hear from you too. So leave me a message and a rating wherever you get your podcast. On the next Holy Human, we'll be with the incredibly amusing and inspiring Amber Hawken, the force of nature behind an amazing book called The Unfuckwithable Life, 7 Codes to Embrace Connection and Vulnerability to Create a Life of Inspiration and Freedom. Until then, I wish you peace and much connection with those you love, especially yourself. Listen and follow Holy Human on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to podcasts.